rather than merely participate in a spiritual exercise. Wilt thou, O Lord, accept the gratitude of our heart for thy blessings upon us as a people and as a fellowship, for thy blessings upon us as we learn and teach, as we experience and proclaim, as we feel and serve. Accept our gratitude for the heritage to which we have fallen heir, for the opportunities by which we have been challenged, for the leadership of thy Spirit, his strength and grace, which have been assured those who seek thy face. For these we give thee thanks. Wilt thou, O Lord, cause us increasingly to be conscious of the lost and the needful. Cause us increasingly to love redemptively. Cause us increasingly to be instruments of thine, to the end that glimpses of thy beauty may be seen in us, to the end that echoes of thy truth may be heard through us, to the end that thy ways, which are so far above our ways, may indeed become our ways, to the end that thy will may be done on earth, even as it is done in heaven. Wilt thou, O Lord, raise up among us yet other laborers? Imbue them with keen minds and willing hands, yielded wills and sensitive hearts. Wilt thou, O Lord, send them and us ourselves into the fields following him who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross and despised the shame? Grant, our Heavenly Father, in thy providence, that we may come rejoicing, bringing in the sheaves. And now, Lord, wilt thou take our minds and hearts in this session, that our deliberations may be in keeping with thine own heartbeat, and that we may be fellow sufferers with all whom we seek to serve. For it is in the name of him who walked the way of sorrows that we pray. Amen.
The next item on our program for the afternoon is the report of our Southern Baptist hospitals and discussions thereof. This report and the discussion are to be led by Dr. Frank Tripp of New Orleans. Dr. Tripp.
Thank you, Brother President. If you will turn in your book of reports to page number 262, you will find the statistical and financial statements and some other information which I trust will be of interest to all of you concerning the two hospitals owned and operated by the hospital board of this convention. This report contains no recommendation. I hope that you will read it very carefully. Certainly I'm not going to take your time. I wouldn't have the time if I desired to do so, to review all of the financial sheets, statements of income and expense, balance sheet, analysis of accounts, etc., that the report contains. But I would express the hope again that when you get home, back to your home or to your office or your study, that you read these reports, because due to the fact that we are so pressed for time, it's the only way, it seems, that you will ever become informed about your institutions. I'm happy to report to you that both of the hospitals and this is about all I'm going to have to say about the finances. Both of the hospitals operated well within their income. We are considerably ahead of the schedule on the retirement of the indebtedness created for the building of the hospital at Jacksonville and the enlargement of the one at New Orleans. We're grateful for a favorable financial position. We are grateful for the acceptance of our services by the people, and we're grateful to you for your prayers and your support. Brother President, I move the adoption of the report as it is contained in the Book of Reports.
Is there a second to the motion? Regularly moved and second. Any discussion? Dr. Tripp.
I was very happy to note in the program that this session is headed in such a manner as to reflect what I believe to be the true mission and ministry of our institutions, along with some of the other benevolent agencies of this convention. You know, whether you are engaged in the area of evangelism, missions, or Christian education, your potential is determined by the number of people you reach, or the number of people it is possible for you to reach. In the ministry of healing, it is certainly true that the effectiveness of it and the total results of our efforts will be determined by the number of people we reach. And you will note in the reading of your report that in both of the hospitals last year, we admitted for all types of treatment a total of more than 70,000 people. And if you want to know about how many sick people that would be, it would be about five times the number of people that this auditorium would hold if every seat was occupied. More than 70,000 people came under the ministry of the two hospitals you operate in 1957. Now, in the matter of Christian witnessing, in dealing with people in crisis situations, in counseling with the families and the friends, who are also our potential, we believe we have one of the greatest opportunities of any agency of the convention. And we believe that we can humbly and truthfully say that we're trying to make the best of it. In the ministry of healing, of course, the first consideration and the first concern is the patient, then the patient's family, the patient's friends. And it is in that area that we are attempting to give our Christian witness and to create a climate or an environment in which men and women can find Christ. We had a man to come to our hospital not too long ago at New Orleans, and it was found that we were going to have to amputate one of his legs. He was not a Christian man. His leg was amputated, and when he left, he had this to say, "I have lost a leg, but I have found Christ." Now, to be sure, all of our efforts are not that dramatic, but many of them are even more so. You would do your heart good. It would do your heart good to know that in our institutions, we're not only reclaiming the health of people, but we're trying to give them something to live on and something to live for. We have a staff of chaplains, just as we have a medical staff. And it is not an unusual thing if you were to make the rounds of our nursing units and pick up the charts of our patients to find that the staff doctor had entered an order, as he would order penicillin or any other drug. He enters a request that the chaplain see this patient today. The chaplain is no longer someone to traipse around after the doctor in somewhat of an apologetic attitude for probably interfering with his work. But he is a vital member of the team. And we not only have a chaplain, we have a staff of chaplains ministering to the people. In this area of ministry, of the healing ministry, we have a new field. It is now one of the most important, most vital phases of our ministry. And that is, what are we going to do with old people? We had a convention recently in the city of New Orleans of people who, of doctors who are, and others engaged in the field of geriatrics. And the president of that association made this rather startling statement. He said 35 out of every 100 babies born in 1958 would live to be 80 years old. We have found medicines. We have developed surgical techniques to keep people alive. But I give you my word, the request that comes to us day after day, can you take this person who, because of advanced senility or some chronic disease or something else, they have become such a care to the family that they can no longer provide for them. I would like to say to you, friends, in state organizations or district associations or any other Baptist group interested in the establishment of an institution to minister to the physical as well as the spiritual needs of the people, give serious consideration to what's going to become of the great army of people whose years have been lengthened, but whose usefulness will probably continue to be impaired by age. Now, there are many other areas in which we minister. In the field of education, in the graduate training of the young doctor, in the training of the young women for the nursing career, of technicians, and many others. And you'd be surprised to know how many careers there are offered by the modern, well-organized hospital, and how many fields of service that we offer to your fine young people if you will send them to us. And I submit to you, there is no more effective witness anywhere for Christ than that of a dedicated nurse or a dedicated doctor. Today, we could place dozens of fine Baptist young women in the field of nursing education if we could find them. In our own institution at New Orleans, Miss Harriet Mather, who has been director of the School of Nursing that bears her name by action of the Board of Directors many years ago, is retiring the 1st of July. And we are in search of a capable, well-trained woman with the educational training and the Baptist background and all of that to take over the responsibilities of directing our School of Nursing. And there are many positions open today where we would like very much to use capable, consecrated, dedicated Baptist people if we could find them. So if your daughter discusses with you the matter of a career, if she indicates any inclination toward our field, please encourage her to get her training in one of our good Baptist hospitals, either state or southwide operated, because there is no field that is so completely uncrowded, and there is no opportunity for service that surpasses it, in my humble opinion. And certainly, we're always happy to receive the fine young men graduating from the medical schools to come and do their graduate work for us as interns and residents. Many people are writing me from time to time, how can Baptists get into the hospital business? And many of our Baptist groups throughout the length and breadth of our convention territory are seriously considering the establishment of hospitals. Well, of course, if you can get enough money together, you can build and operate a Baptist hospital. I would say to you, quite frankly, if you do not have in mind the kind of a hospital that will become an effective Christian institution and an effective denominational agency, I'd stay out of it. But if you can't get enough money together to build one, then you, my Baptist friends, can become associated with your friends in other evangelical groups, Methodists, Presbyterians, and the others, and build a community hospital, and in that you can place your your trained personnel who are Christians and who want to serve Christ in the ministry of healing. There are many ways that we can undergird this ministry other than building and operating our own hospitals, as effective as that is. We're grateful to you for all the support that we've received through the years, and I can assure you that if you could walk the corridors of one of your hospitals, and many of these hospitals operated by state groups, I'm sure you would be definitely convinced that it's the kind of a hospital that you would want to go to yourself or take your family to in the hour of their needs. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Tripp. The moment for this item is expired. Those of you who favor the motion that has been made for the adoption of this report, properly seconded, will you make it known, please, by saying aye. Opposed, no. The motion is carried. Dr. Jim Westbury, the chairman of the Committee on Committees, asks the chair to remind each member of that committee of the meeting exactly 10.5 minutes from now at 3 o'clock in the committee room, which can be found at the head of the escalator, and the escalator goes just off the hallway near the registration booth. That's the Committee on Committees. Next in order is the report of the Relief and Annuity Board. The chair recognizes Brother R. Alton Reed, the Executive Secretary.
Mr. President, in your book of reports, if you will turn to pages 199 to 221, you will find there the report for the year's work of 1957. You will notice that we do not have any recommendations in this report. Therefore, Mr. President, I move the adoption of this report, after which we will have a speaker.
Is there a second to the motion? Regularly moved and seconded, Dr. Reed.
Our speaker for this afternoon is one of our local board members, Mr. Clare H. Zachary, who is a Texan by birth, but spent part of his earlier life in the state of Oklahoma, where he met and married Mrs. Zachary. In 1933, Mr. Zachary and his family returned to Texas, where he became Secretary Treasurer of the Southern Union Gas Company. Since 1945, he has been president of that company, which is a natural gas utility serving about 300,000 customers in Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, and Colorado. He is also chairman of the board of the West Ohio Gas Company of Lima, Ohio. Mr. Zachary has been honored by the gas industry by being elected president of the Southern Gas Association, director of the Independent Natural Gas Association, and is immediate past president of the American Gas Association. He is a deacon in the First Baptist Church of Dallas. He's chairman of its stewardship committee. He is a trustee at Baylor University, and he's chairman of the Baylor Hospital Building Committee of Dallas. He is vice chairman of the Administrative Committee of the Relief and Annuity Board of this convention. Frankly, we have no finer Christian layman on our board, and it is an honor to present to you our speaker this afternoon, Mr. Clare H. Zachary.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am humbled by the opportunity of speaking to this group. I appreciate the introduction, and I feel like the Ms. Zachary's maid one time that told her she wanted to get married, and she took a day off. The next, and Ms. Zachary asked her how long she'd known the man she was marrying. She said she just met him the day before. So the next day she came back and to get off another day. Ms. Zachary says, well, what in the world's wrong here? And she said, Ms. Zachary said, that is the most over-introduced man I ever saw. About 4 years ago, I was in St. Louis and came to a gas association meeting, and this group was meeting there at that time, and so I took a cab to go down to get a half a day in with the Southern Baptist Convention. The cab driver said to me, you up here with these Baptists? Why? And he said, well, sir, he says, you know, these cab drivers, they haul these convention people generally around to the cabarets and bars and get big tips from them. But he says, these Baptists got in here Monday and said they had the Ten Commandments in one pocket and a $10 bill in the other, and they haven't broke either one of them since they've been here. I know they flash lights around here, so I had better get underway with my report for the Relief Annuity Board, although I would like to visit with this wonderful group. It is said that every great institution had in the mind of one man. The Relief and Annuity Board had its beginning more than 40 years ago in the heart and mind of Dr. William Lunsford. Deep concern filled his heart because so many of our Baptist ministers came to the end of their long ministry without provision for the time when they would be unable, on account of age or sickness, to continue their ministry. He shared his thoughts and concern with fellow ministers, and just 40 years ago, the Southern Baptist Convention, at its meeting in Hot Springs, Arkansas, passed a resolution which brought into being what is now the Relief and Annuity Board of the Southern Baptist Convention. A gift of $100,000 from the Sunday School Board represented the total assets of the board at that time. This was a small beginning for such an enterprise, but the enterprise was based upon compassion and faith. It was scriptural, although the Relief and Annuity Board's commission is not to carry the message, but to care for the messenger. The work has grown and its service extended because God was in it. The work and responsibility of the Relief and Annuity Board, as the name indicates, is divided between two distinct functions. The Relief Department and Committee carefully and sympathetically administer the funds available for relief work. The funds for this purpose are limited to those received as a percentage of the cooperative program dollar plus free will gifts. The financial support given through relief checks is small, since the funds are not great and the calls are many. Distributions last year amounted to $332,000. It is the responsibility of the board's investment department to safeguard and at the same time increase by interest additions the trust funds belonging to retirement plan members. The Finance Committee, composed of fine Christian businessmen, gives final approval to all investments. From the small beginning in 1918, the work of the board has grown as more and more ministers, missionaries, and denominational workers have entered the various plans, until today, after 40 years, the future financial security of more than 19,000 Southern Baptists who are now members of its plans is being protected by its retirement policies. Total assets of more than $58 million are being held in trust by the board to assure the payment of the annuities and benefits as they become due under these policy contracts. As we study the 40 years of service of the board, we must conclude that the Relief and Annuity Board is rendering the service and meeting the need for which it was established. It has paid out in those 40 years more than $6.25 million in relief distributions and more than $20.75 million in annuities, making the total benefits paid of more than $27 million. Yes, the Lord has blessed the work of this board through the years, but its service cannot be measured merely in dollars and cents, but rather in security for the brethren. Behind all has been the leadership of our Lord. While there is pleasure in meditating upon the great progress made in the past, we have an axiom in business that too much meditation upon past accomplishments can lead to the booby trap of complacency. Lest we fall into that trap, I want to tell you that although we do have 19,000 of our people now protected by policies, only 34% of our Southern Baptist preachers now have this protection. You'll be interested to know how this figure compares with that of other denominations. Episcopal, 100% protected. The church pays the total cost. Lutheran, 89%, Methodist, 78%, Presbyterian, 74%. Of course, we as Southern Baptists know that entry into our plan by the individual is entirely voluntary, which makes it more imperative that our constituency understand the benefits of our plans. Many letters come to our board. Some are heartrending letters from aged and sick servants of Christ on the relief rolls. Contrasted to those letters are letters from ministers who are looking to the future with confidence and peace of mind because when they were younger, they had joined the plan. The need for protection offered by the program is not limited to older people. It's equally as important to the young. This was demonstrated recently when a young minister in his early 30s died, leaving a wife and small child. He had joined the Southern Baptist Protection Plan in 1956. His widow was now receiving monthly payments from the board. Until the percentage of participation of our own denomination has approached 75% rather than the 34%, we all have a great challenge before us. The key to the situation, in my opinion, is the church. I have been privileged to serve on the board for a number of years and to observe the complete dedication to this work. I know that in the future, as in the past, every effort is going to be made by all, from its capable executive secretary, Dr. Reed, right through the organization, to continue to bring to those not now enrolled information concerning the protection plan. But may I, as a layman, share with you a suggestion which I think could be a vital one. For years, we in the Relief and Annuity Board have said our task is to get the message over to the ministers, educational directors, and so forth. And I'm sure that was our task in the years past and must continue to be. But with Social Security opening up to our pastors and with retirement benefits having become a vital part of all industry today, I'm convinced that we should shift the emphasis from selling the preachers to selling the churches, the individual Baptist churches. That's the approach we use in the business world. Retirement and protection programs are the responsibility of the employer. And the employer brings the employee into the program. And most employers, sometimes referred to as hard-headed or even hard-hearted businessmen, pay for all of this program, or at the least, the far greater part of it, of this protection. Should we in our Baptist churches do less? I strongly feel that the protection and retirement program of our ministers is the problem of the church and not just of the minister. And this is where our fine layman can render a real service. Why, we laymen wouldn't sleep at night if our church buildings were not adequately insured. Why not our ministers? In closing, there are strong arguments that may be briefly marshaled in favor of the church assuming the full responsibility and the full cost of this protection. First, it is a sure way to bring the needed protection to our ministers. That's the first. Practically every other major evangelical denomination which has a successful protection program has for years urged this method, or used this method of urging the churches to pay the total cost of this protection program. Second, the approximately 66% of our Southern Baptist preachers and their families who are not thus protected are, in the main, pastors in the smaller churches who receive smaller salaries. These are men who can least afford to be unprotected in case of disability, death, or retirement. With their smaller salaries and often larger families, it is only natural to assume that they have little, if anything, put aside for a rainy day. third in industry, and for lay employees of the churches, one half of Social Security is paid by the employer. However, if the preacher enters Social Security, he must do so as a self-employed man and bear all the cost himself. Not half of it, but all of it. A further financial burden on him. Fourth, it puts the protection program on the basis of protection for the ministry and not of a minister. Fifth, there is an income tax advantage. Where the church assumes the entire obligation, the plan becomes a non-participating plan, and the pastor would not now pay income tax on the amount of cost paid for his benefit, but would pay income tax later when he begins receiving the benefits, at which time he would ordinarily be in a much lower income tax bracket. Sixth, it protects the Baptist denomination from an ever-increasing relief load, which will inevitably follow unless the pastor and his family are protected in case of disability, death, or retirement. Seventh, the preacher and his family can face the future retirement with a song in their hearts rather than a feeling of uncertainty or even of being neglected. I believe that there are thousands of laymen across the Southern Baptist Convention who would like to make certain that their pastor has this. This financial responsibility through the Southern Baptist Protection Plan of their denomination. The cost will be small. It can't be over $200 in any instance. And the results rewarding, that's $200 a year. And the results rewarding. I believe that this is not only good Christianity, but also good business, because it gives the church protection as well as the pastor and his family. We in the Relief and Annuity Board earnestly covet the continuing prayers of every Southern Baptist on behalf of the work of the board as it continues in its task of ministering to God's ministers. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Zachary. Thank you, sir. We thank this splendid layman for this fine comment on this report. Motion has been made and seconded that this report be adopted. Dr. Reed, any further comment? Those of you who favor the adoption of this report, will you make it known, please, by saying aye? Opposed, no. The motion is carried and the report is adopted. We recognize now Brother Bill Reynolds to lead us in a 5-minute period of singing, and I hope you will join with it.
Sir? No, sir. 5 minutes.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Will you turn to number 29? My hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness. I dare not trust the sweetest frame, but wholly lean on Jesus' name. Surely we can sing this. Number 29. Would you like to stand, please? You can beat there. Would you sing the chorus for me one time? Everybody, everybody, will you? Here we go. On a Christ the Father. Thank you. thank you. You do not know how different that sounded. Now, will you keep it up? Let's keep our congregational singing strong and virile, will you? Here and when you get home. Second stanza, sing it.
When the darkness seems to hide his face,
as you remain standing, will you turn to number 12 as we sing together the first two stanzas of There Is a Name I Love to Hear. I love to sing its worth. Number 12.
Thank you, brethren. Now, brethren, before we come to the next order of business, I think I should, in trying to take our president's place for a few moments, I think the presiding officer should call attention of the convention to Article 12 of the Constitution of our convention, which among other things says, the Committee on Order of Business shall provide periods of time during the early days of the convention for the introduction of miscellaneous business, and when introduced, unless the convention then gives its unanimous consent for immediate consideration, shall fix times for the consideration of the same. Now, my brethren, if any of you have any item of miscellaneous business, and you have any doubt that you could get unanimous consent for immediate consideration, I believe it's incumbent upon me as your temporary presiding officer to say to you that such business should be presented this afternoon, because if there is not unanimous consent given, the Committee on Order of Business is under the compulsion by constitutional authority to set a time and place for such discussion and advise the members of the convention as to the subject thereof. Now, I believe that is fair, and honest and exact. And if any of you should have any matter of miscellaneous business that you feel is important enough to bring to the convention, I believe you would do well to heed that word about the constitutional provision. Next in order is the Executive Committee promotional report. In just a moment, the chair is going to recognize our Executive Secretary of the Executive Committee. May I say a word for all of us to Porter Ruth? I have known Dr. Crouch, as have you. I have known and loved Dr. McCall, as have you. I now know and love my Executive Secretary, a consecrated layman, wise, kindly, just, thoroughly Christian, and it's my joy and privilege to say to him as I present him to you that for a few years of serving on his committee, which comes to an end now, I love him very much. Porter, God bless you.
Thank you, Dr. Hudgens. I was watching the way he was using his words. I didn't know whether he meant the committee was coming to an end or he was coming to an end. I hope neither one of us will come to an end this afternoon. One of the great joys of life that comes in addition to the security that is to be found in your own relationship to God through Jesus Christ, in the salvation of sin, from sin, is the joy of working with associates who are friends and co-workers in the kingdom of God. It has been my privilege and joy during these short 7 years I have been serving as Executive Secretary of the Executive Committee to work with two of the finest associates I think you could find on God's earth. And it is a real privilege and a joy to introduce them to you at this time. First, I should like to present Dr. Albert McClellan, who is the Associate Secretary and Director of Publications for the Executive Committee of the Southern Baptist Convention, Dr. McClellan. Dr. McClellan keeps busy during these sessions of the convention because he is the official press representative of the Southern Baptist Convention. You know him as the editor of the Baptist program, as the one who does a great deal of planning in all of the publications which are so helpful to you in your stewardship emphasis in your church. Albert, it's a joy to have you as an associate and to have this opportunity of presenting you to the Southern Baptist Convention. And then for the presentation of the promotion section of the Executive Committee, and you'll find this report for the promotion section on page 9 of your Book of Reports and the publications section on page 11 of your Book of Reports. It's a real privilege to present Dr. Merrill D. Moore, who is the Director of Promotion for the Executive Committee and Associate Secretary. Maybe I ought to tell you this little secret, but in the meeting of the Executive Committee yesterday, the Executive Committee took unanimous action instructing, ordering, directing, and there was one other word used, but I can't remember it. But anyhow, instructing the Executive Secretary to arrange a suitable recognition service at the June meeting of the Executive Committee, calling attention to the completion of 10 years of service as Director of Promotion by Dr. Merrill D. Moore. It is a real privilege to present Dr. Moore.
Thank you, Dr. Ruth, Mr. President, messengers to the convention. Time would fail to give expression to those sentiments of my own heart of appreciation for working with Dr. Porter Ruth, the Executive Secretary, Dr. Albert McClellan, the Director of Publications, the other members of the staff of the Executive Committee of the Southern Baptist Convention. I want the privilege now of presenting the Assistant Director of Church Finance, Dr. Robert J. Hastings, an efficient, capable, and a wonderfully fine associate who's making tremendous contributions in these areas of which we shall be speaking this afternoon. Thank you. I can hardly forbear to tell something on myself.
Dr. Hastings, would it be all right if we tell it?
Dr. Ruth was just talking about those 10 years. You know, they slip by in such a hurry. Yesterday, I was talking to Dr. Hastings, my young associate, and I said here in this auditorium, Dr. Hastings, you know, the very first Southern Baptist Convention I ever attended was right here in Houston in 1926 in the old city auditorium. He looked at me and he said, "Is it still standing?" I have a son at home also that on occasion can remind me that years have slipped by, but wonderful years they are, these that I've had the privilege of working with Dr. McCall, Dr. Crouch, and now Dr. Ruth and the other associates on this staff of the Executive Committee of the Convention. Now we will have the reading of the recommendations of the promotion section of the Executive Committee report. These brethren will come and will read them in turn. Brother Chadwick will read recommendation number one.
Mr. President, we recommend that the convention approve the citation given to Dr. Frank Tripp on the 25th anniversary of the 100,000 Club as follows. Award of appreciation and grateful recognition of Dr. Frank Tripp, the founder of the 100,000 Club, which made a significant contribution to Southern Baptist life at a critical time in its history. Mr. President, I move you, sir, the adoption of this recommendation.
You hear the motion. Is there a second? Regularly moved and seconded. Those of you who favor the adoption of this part of the recommendation will vote aye. Opposed, no. The motion is carried.
Dr. Moore.
Charles McLean will read recommendation number two.
Mr. Chairman, it is our conviction that the cooperative program of the Southern Baptists is the fundamental, effective, and indispensable channel of providing for the needs of all our work, and that we urge all Baptists to join in giving the cooperative program their loyal and undivided support.
Dr. Harold Siever will read recommendation number three.
We sincerely trust that you will give serious consideration to this portion of the recommendation because it has to do with the operation of this program in your local churches. That the percentage plan of giving to world missions through the cooperative program be approved as a basic part of the convention's promotion program with the following objectives. Number one, to include the cooperative program in every church budget. Number two, to adopt for the cooperative program a definite percentage of the total budget receipts of the church. Number three, to focus on cooperative program gifts in the percentage promotion. Number four, to compute the cooperative program percentage on the basis of all budgeted gifts. And number five, to increase the percentage of the total budget given to world missions through the cooperative program regularly.
Dr. Elwin Wilkinson will read recommendation number four.
Mr. Chairman, we recommend that current promotion emphasis of 2+ for world missions through the cooperative program be approved, and that during this emphasis, item number 5 above read as follows. Increase the percentage of the total budget given to world missions through the cooperative program by at least 2% each year. Mr. Chairman, I move the adoption of item number 4. Chairman, I move the adoption of items 2, 3, and 4.
Thank you. Is there a second to the motion? Regularly moved and seconded. We'll save our vote until the conclusion of the presentation. We recognize Dr. Moore.
I recognize Dr. Porter Ruth, who will perform a function in which all of you will be greatly interested.
Just a few moments ago, you approved a motion which would express your appreciation for the contribution made by Dr. Frank Tripp as the founder of the 100,000 Club 25 years ago yesterday. Last night at 11:20, he told me just a few moments ago. We couldn't arrange to have this presentation at 11:20 last night, and so we are having it this afternoon in connection with the promotion committee's report. And so, Dr. Tripp, if you will come forward, I should like to present to you on behalf of the Southern Baptist Convention this award of appreciation, which reads in grateful recognition of Dr. Frank Tripp, the founder of the 100,000 Club, which made a significant contribution to Southern Baptist life at a critical time in its history. I could go on to say something about the significant contribution Dr. Tripp made in the whole field of promotion of stewardship in Southern Baptist life. But it is with a real sense of pleasure, and perhaps I ought to say a hope, that the time will not come when we will have to find ourselves in such a morass of debts that we will have to face another situation we faced 25 years ago. With real appreciation that we present this to Dr. Frank Tripp of New Orleans. Dr. Tripp.
Can I make a brief
comment? Yes, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. Some of you may remember that at the convention meeting in Fort Worth in 1934, when we had been promoting the 100,000 Club for its first year, that on the recommendation of the president, Dr. M.E. Dodd, the convention conferred upon me a degree of D.D., Doctor of Debts. And now, after these 24 years, I'm getting my diploma. Thank you very much, Dr. Porter, and friends of this convention. I shall not, of course, take but just a moment to acknowledge my deep and sincere gratitude for this expression of your appreciation of the modest contribution which I sincerely tried to make under the blessings of our Heavenly Father. I don't know whether Mrs. Tripp is here or not. I think she is somewhere. But I would like to acknowledge the fact that during the 3 years, I was riding airplanes, railroad trains, and buses, and even hitchhiking over the Southern Baptist Convention to try to lead Southern Baptists in the payment of their debts. She stayed home and did a remarkable job rearing five wonderful children. So really, if anybody made a sacrificial contribution to the payment of Southern Baptist debts, I suspect maybe Ms. Tripp did. I thank you again, and as I told the executive committee yesterday, I've been a very fortunate man. During those 3 years that I promoted the movement on a voluntary, non-salaried basis, on leave of absence from the First Baptist Church of St. Joseph, Missouri, of which I had the honor of being the pastor for 10 years. I was privileged to campaign with the great giants of Southern Baptist life, men such as Drs. Truett and Scarba and Dodd and Sampe and all the others. Many, many of the men who served as state leaders in the organizational setup. Certainly that experience enriched my life, and I shall always be grateful for it. And I would not be true to my own heart if I did not express for myself, and I believe I could for you as I receive this token of your appreciation, my deep and lasting gratitude to the great First Church of St. Joseph, Missouri, who gave up its pastor and paid his salary so that it wouldn't cost you a dime for a period of 3 years. Thank you very much, and God bless you.
Thank you, Dr. Tripp. Is Mrs. Tripp in the meeting here this afternoon? She'd shoot me. Mrs. Tripp stands here. As the part of him that goeth down to the battle, so shall the part of her be that stayeth by the stove. Thank you, Dr. Tripp. And thanks to that wonderful First Baptist Church in St. Joseph, Missouri also. We are privileged to report to you this afternoon on Stewardship Cooperative Program, the Forward Program, and 2+, tools in the hands of Southern Baptists for spiritual and missionary advance. May I ask how many of you here this afternoon are members of churches which have already used the Forward Program of Church Finance? Would you raise your hands? There are testimonies that every one of you could give this afternoon, but we are asking a very few to give some brief testimonies. There is one church in Missouri which had a very successful use of the Forward Program. This program was offered to the churches of the Southern Baptist Convention generally for the first time during the past year after having been used in 44 churches in test campaigns in the preceding year. You find in your hands, in the envelope that was given you as you came in the door, a green tract on the Forward Program, and on the front page you will see that reports from 697 of the churches which have used it this year show an average increase of 84% in the amount pledged, 86% in the number of pledges, 96% in the number of tithers, and 41% increase in the gifts through the cooperative program. Dr. James H. Smith, pastor of the Raytown Baptist Church in Raytown, Missouri, is pastor of a church which had a budget last year of $92,000. This year, with the use of the Forward Program, $140,000 was pledged in comparison with $23,000 last year. Last year, I believe I'm right in saying that this church led the state in gifts through the cooperative program at $37,000, but this year, with the use of the Forward Program, have almost doubled the gifts through the cooperative program to $70,000. Dr. Smith, come and tell us briefly, but something about this experience in your church.
It was my privilege to tour the state of Missouri in January of 1957, with a group of men presenting to the state the Forward Program of Church Finance. Dr. Earl Harding, our beloved Executive Secretary, Dr. W.H. Allison, the Superintendent of Church Finance and Stewardship, and Mr. Lloyd Collins, our Director of Public Relations, were to present the plan of the Forward Program of Church Finance to the state. It was my position to provide some inspiration. And each time when Dr. Harding presented me to an audience, it was always with the statement that this is the pastor of the church that's leading the state of Missouri in gifts to world missions through the cooperative program, giving percentage-wise 40%, which is the largest percent in the state, and dollar-wise, the most dollars. We were off down in South Missouri when some smart aleck asked a question one afternoon, and they said, "Are you giving 40% of your total money, or are you giving 40% of a budget, and then in addition, do you have a building program or a building fund?" I had to hang my head in shame that afternoon and say, "Well, we have two pockets. One is for building money, and one is for our regular church budget." But I went back to my room that night and didn't sleep very well. The next morning, I told the team, "We're going to do something about this, Lord willing, when I get back home." We started talking this thing that we hadn't actually been honest. We'd been telling all over we're giving 40% to world missions through the cooperative program. And yet at the end of the year last year, and it was figured out, we'd only given actually 26.5% of all the monies that had come in. But in the new budget that we're operating on this year, $175,000 budget, it's 40% of the total, because that budget includes the building program also. Last year, we had the privilege of giving over $37,000 to world missions through the cooperative program, which was 40% of an operating budget. But this year, if we meet that budget, it means that we will almost double that figure to world missions. This question arises, however, and that is, what has the forward program of church finance done for you? And I can come back to answer that, I think, rather materially, in that our offerings this year have amounted to about $1,000 per Sunday, more than they did last year. We thank God for the forward program of church finance. We thank God for what it has done for our church, for our people. We thank God for what it's doing for world missions through the cooperative program.
Thank you, Dr. Smith. Last year, we had a pastor of a rural church of approximately 100 members to report the forward program worked wonders in our church. Sometimes we are asked, will it help a church that has already a thoroughgoing program of stewardship in Lismore? Dr. Norris Palmer and a fine layman from his church are going to stand here and try to answer that question for us.
Dr. Moore, our church felt that it had made reasonable progress across the years in increased finances and in the development of stewardship consciousness. We had reached the point of being able to report 1,000 tithers in our congregation. We were able to support at one time 11 missions, and we had gone into a building expansion program costing about $1.25 million. And were succeeding with that before this plan came to our attention.
What did it do for you, Dr. Palmer, the use of this plan?
Baton Rouge First Church was fully conscious of the fact that in spite of good records and achievements, such as I've just referred to, we had not reached our maximum in the matter of stewardship and denominational support and support of world missions. Therefore, when the forward program of church finance came into being, we very enthusiastically and heartily entered into it. You are not interested, I know, in simple figures or percentages as showing the results, although they were very gratifying. Suffice it to say that one member of our church, who had been in campaign after campaign for perhaps a quarter of a century and close to the center of it each time, said that this was the happiest giving he'd ever witnessed in his church. But there were other results than simply financial. People were discovered who were not at work and were put to work, and they liked it. Fellowship came to be almost a different thing than it had been. The best thing I know to say about it is that it was intensified. Tithing came to be strictly popular with our people. It was actually popularized. And the cooperative program came to be a live topic of conversation among us. All departments of our church life were strengthened, greatly strengthened. I'm sure that our next revival meeting undertaking was far more successful because we had had the use of the forward program of church finance